You are listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis, the one and only podcast that discusses modern plastic surgery and leaves you looking great and feeling better.
Welcome, everyone, to the Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis, board-certified plastic surgeon. I have to tell you all, I am extremely excited about our guest today. I have the president of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, Dr. Lynn Jeffers, on the phone, and I'm going to go into a whole bunch of stuff that she's been doing and that she does in private practice, as well as running a breast institute and being a chief medical officer. But I want to welcome her onto the podcast. Hi there, Dr. Jeffers. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, I'm so excited. This is like a real honor and a privilege to have you on board. So you're managing okay out in Ventura, California?
We are still here, as I like to say when people ask how we're doing. So I think that's a great start.
Yeah. Have you been shut down again in California with doing any elective procedures? I heard as of a few days ago, there's been a lot of changes out in California again.
Well, we haven't been shut down as a state as far as elective procedures, although there are pockets in different, specific hospitals that have shut down elective surgeries again, but it hasn't been statewide like it was, in the first surge.
Gotcha. I know, because when we got closed down in the, I guess it was March 16th, yes. Immediately I started reaching out to all my plastic surgery friends everywhere. And before you know it, the International Plastic Surgery Society started putting on these great weekly webinars and conferences. And it was amazing to see how plastic surgeons from around the world were all in the same boat. They were all sitting around in their little rooms, like I was, talking about what happened in Italy and Greece. And it was amazing to just see everybody coming together and trying to talk about this. But one of the things that I know I wanted to ask you about is how you put together such a tremendous response by the Plastic Surgery Society to deliver ventilators and PPE equipment. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, no, sure. And thanks for asking. I mean, if you think about it, at the beginning of this pandemic, if you go back to that point, we had some fair warning from Italy and from across the world as to what we potentially could be facing. And as things started to shut down, people wanted to know, how can I help? What can I do? So people started reaching out to me and other people, especially at ASPS, and saying, gosh, I've got PPE in my OR. How can I donate that? Or I have a ventilator if that helps anybody. And so what we decided to do was set up a clearinghouse where people could enter in, I've got two ventilators, where I'm located, I have, five boxes of gowns and maybe, however many of masks. And we started a clearinghouse. And then suddenly within, I'd say 48 hours or so, suddenly we found ourselves working with the White House COVID task force, as well as helping FEMA and trying to source, don't ask me how we got there, but just trying to source ventilators and N95 masks. I think we sourced, I'd say 5 million masks for Columbia, and then another million for NYU, I think, through Cuomo's office. So it was a massive undertaking, but I think the key here, which what I was really proud of, was just our members wanting to help out. And that's really what started it all. And then we found ourselves working with Oracle to create a platform. I mean, it was, it's one of those things you wouldn't even think you were doing. And within a week, here we were doing all these things.
Oh my God. Morphed. It just morphed into this huger than life type of a thing.
It did. But it was just, a lot of people wanted to know what can I do? And that's where it went.
Well, as you speak about the White House thing, I want to let everybody know that's listening that you were, coming out of high school, a White House presidential scholar. So I kind of think that this whole word president is kind of in your DNA somewhere, now being president of the society. And so I really do think that it really goes to show how much you really want to create a change in the world. And I think that's a tremendous thing. I mean, all surgeons, I guess, like you were always, I guess, just like when I was going through my training, you want to be a problem solver as a surgeon. You get involved in something, and even if it's not in your surgical specialty, you want to be somebody in the community or somebody involved in coming up with an answer and solving a problem. But you've really done it throughout your career on so many different levels. I really commend you so much. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, honestly, I think we were talking about this at one point, but you know, it's not something you set out and say, gee, I'd like to do this, at least not for me. It's always been, what can I do to help? You know, and we all help in our own ways, in our own communities, our hospitals, and in our practices, where you look around and say, gosh, I think we could do that better. Or gosh, what can I do to help here? And then it just morphs into this. And then you get, as they say, the busier you get, the more people ask you to do more things. That's what happens.
It's true. You know, you can handle it. So they look for the busiest person to give it to. That's right. So speaking of help, the guidelines that ASAPS the ASPS put together to allow plastic surgeons the idea of how to open safely was a great springboard for all of us to use and help us, guiding us to really make sure that patients knew that we were doing everything we could to really do this in the safest possible manner. And I have a question to ask you. After that was put together, well, maybe you could even go into, how did you assemble the information so that you really could put this out so that everybody could use it as like their guideline or their book of their playbook on how to do things?
Sure. No, I mean, great question. When COVID first started, you know, all of us were inundated with information, or lack of it, depending on what you were looking at, right? And there were all these theories going around. If you remember the multitude of Facebook groups and phone calls, and like you said, everybody had a different answer, and because nobody knew. And as a result of that, there were all these questions about, what if we have to shut down? What about the triple P loans? So American Society of Plastic Surgeons, we put together a COVID resource page just because we knew people needed it for just the questions that we were getting. Right. Started using that as a resource and throwing up links and throwing up things that were links to the CDC, to different organizations. Well, in the middle of that, if you recall, we put out some statements about shutting down elective surgeries, other statements and so forth. So this was just a natural progression of what we were doing there. So for this particular one, though, I wanted to make sure that we were representative of the type of members that we had. So we actually had people from different geographies, because as you know, different states were experiencing COVID very differently and different phases of that pandemic. We had people who were in private practice as well as academics, and as well as employed practice, just wanting to make sure we covered those things. And then we had people in different stages of their career, because that does make a difference. And then finally, we wanted to make sure that they were people who were of... now I forgot what I was going to say, but at the end of the day, we wanted to make it as representative as possible, because
absolutely
it makes a difference when you're talking about things that are feasible and not feasible. So then we thought it was going to be just a statement like we did before, you know, like a one pager type of statement, just so that when people who were in states that were starting to allow them to open up, they would have some guidelines. Well, as you saw, it turned out to be, an 8-page document.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, it's like a playbook, like a real playbook
exactly.
of how to do something.
So we sat there and we debated a lot of these things. You know, what do we do about testing? What is the evidence out there? How do we decide how to prioritize? What about cleaning? What about what are the things out there, best practices that people were doing in their office about spacing out patients? And really, that's what happened. It was just multiple hours of talking and coming up with a document we could all live by. And we knew it was a living document. We knew it wasn't going to just stay that way, that it was a good start and that we were going to work on it again.
That's the thing that I wanted to transition into, to say, well, that came out, I think, around in the beginning of June.
Yes.
Possibly. And since then, now that we've all had a month or so to really get into practice again, have you done anything in either your private practice? So for everyone listening, this young lady is a very, very busy person. So she has her own private practice. She's the chief medical officer at the hospital and also the medical director of the breast center. So out of those three different hats that you're wearing, which one would you say has become the most challenging in this COVID environment to deal with?
Well, first of all, can I say all of the above? and I'm going to say that I'm very happy that you said young, so that makes me feel really
That's
good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Luckily, you can't see my picture, so we're good on that. But
I saw the picture. You look great.
We all, you know, in each of those settings, so your own private practice, which I'm in solo private practice, although I do share an office. And then, of course, hospital-based, which being a CMO is a little bit different because you're seeing in the entire spectrum of people working within the hospital. And then our breast center is really a multidisciplinary group of people who've come together to do a team approach to breast cancer treatment. I mean, those are all different. They're just different.
They are.
Issues that we're dealing with. So to give you an example, at the hospital level, especially during the pandemic, we were meeting every single day, probably a couple times a day as a group. And then we actually started a daily one with all the physician leaders, the hospital leaders, the nursing leaders, and administration. And then I was sending out a daily email, actually, literally a daily email, even on weekends, to the physicians, because it was just easier to keep everybody, you know, apprised of what was happening. Because if you remember, there were days where the masking recommendation would change after 6 hours. You know?
Absolutely.
So we were changing all the time, and just people understood that our visiting policy was going to change. And there were so many unknowns. We didn't know what the right thing was. And one minute, you know, this medication was in, and the next minute it was out.
Right. And
then in our private practices, as you know, how do you keep it afloat? What do you do with your employees? What do you do with telehealth, even though they said, yes, you can use Zoom or you can use something else, but what could you do? And what were you going to be held liable? With my other hat on, I also sit on the American Medical Association's Council of Medical Service. So, you know, there are a lot of things that everyone is facing, but we are each facing it in a slightly different way.
Like with all the different things, I mean, just, I know from just being, I'm the chief of plastic surgery at our Jefferson Health System here. And I know every week we were having these town hall meetings to just like get everybody together and to say, okay, this is what we've learned this week. And like you said, every week or like almost every day, right? It was changing, but I just can't imagine how you could be involved in all of that stuff. Plus all the other things. I just know it must've been overwhelming for you to really be on top of it like that to really, but I hear that being on all those other boards and being on all those other committees probably enables you to kind of migrate some of the knowledge from one to another. And that probably does help.
It certainly does to give you some overlap. I mean, you know, as president of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, I was interfacing quite a bit with plastic surgeons across the country. But as you probably know, we're also the world's largest organization of board sort of plastic surgeons. So hearing from international members as well, and just hearing their stories let us get a head start on getting prepared, right? And then when I told you about when we were suddenly sourcing PPE, one of the things we set up for our members for ASPS when we started to open up is we realized, oh, that's great that we can open up, but none of us can get any PPE and half of us donated them, right? So what do we do? And so what ASPS did was we actually set up, we actually ended up fronting some of the money, buying it in bulk, because that's the only way you could have gotten PPE. Like our hospitals buy them at $100,000, I mean, 100,000 units at pop. So we fronted the money, bought it, put it on our website and sold them to our members, you know, pretty much at cost. So that they would even have access to it at all. So, and that helped, you know, so that helps us too, because those sources, you know, our hospitals could also use. So there's so much, I guess, luckily we're all facing the same thing. So everything that I was learning could go into different spheres of my life.
I will say I haven't slept very much in the last 5 months, but
I would imagine
all for
you
good
haven't.
Cause.
and you're still able to do your private practice as well. You're still seeing patients and things?
Well, for better or for worse, since our offices were closed, I didn't have to at least deal with the seeing the patient part, you know, except for dealing with virtual and talking on the phone. And as a side too, you know, I was also diagnosed with breast cancer, now a year and a half ago. So it was actually undergoing active treatment until about November. So this came as just the time when I thought I might reopen my practice. So this would be, it's going to be a challenge either way. But so that just adds to what everybody else is going through.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with everyone that's listening and everything. But are you feeling well and everything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm knock on wood. So it takes a new meaning. I'm being happy to be here, you know, so.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. See, it's even more of an amazing, it's tough to be even more of a superwoman than you are, but that's even more incredible. Oh my gosh.
Well, we're all super people in our own right, right? Well, I mean, we didn't get here without it, so.
That's true. Wow. That really is amazing. I wanted to transition into some trends that, the society has really put out. So it's interesting because the American Society of Plastic Surgeons put out like trends for 2019, and then COVID-19 happens. You know? And it's interesting because I would love you to kind of critique what the trends the society felt was going to be. And now there's this forecast for what it's going to be post pandemic in 2020. And I'm interested to hear your perspectives on that.
Well, the interesting thing, like you said, is, as you know, every year, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons puts out our annual statistics, which we've been doing for quite some time now, and people expect it at a certain time. Well, our release date was right around the COVID pandemic. Then we thought, well, gee, it didn't seem like the right time. When we did release it, we wanted to know, I wonder what this pandemic would do to how people felt about plastic surgery and what those trends are. And as you know, any prediction is just as good as take it for a grain of salt, right? Till we actually see what happens. But the interesting thing was we did find that, as you would expect, many of our respondents were increasing their use of telemedicine. That is not a surprise, I suppose, but it was just interesting to confirm that. And then we asked our members what they thought prediction-wise people were asking for during this pandemic. And the things that people were interested in were Botox or botulinum toxin, breast augmentation, fillers, liposuction, abdominoplasty. And then we actually did a consumer survey to get an idea of what people were thinking out there. And as you would expect, I guess you wouldn't expect it, but you know, the people who are interested were interested in plastic surgery, still are interested in plastic surgery. Now, the timing may be different, as we've seen in other times of crisis, but there's, you know, they still want to do it. It's just they weren't able to do it during the COVID pandemic or for other reasons. So.
Yeah, well, that's what I felt was so incredibly. I guess the best way to think of it is just so positive in spirit is that there was still this interest for people with that survey that they were so positive about plastic surgery as well as cosmetic procedures despite going through those, 4 months of having to be quarantined. And I know personally in my practice, I have seen a tremendous amount of I guess the best way to say it is just patients are just so thankful that they have the ability to come in and just feel better about themselves and get procedures done that they really had put on the back burner. I don't know if you're seeing this in your practice or throughout the hospitals, but I know so many of my patients that really wanted to do a certain procedure, they had to really coordinate it with either family or their jobs. And fortunately, many of them are working from home now, and they can do the operation that they really were going to put off to maybe, you know, Christmas time of next year, but now they can do it sooner. And they can go back to work the next day because they're home doing a Zoom call.
Exactly.
So it's fantastic. And this is one of the things that I was going to ask you if you're doing what I'm doing with this, but I'm still having these patients after, let's say, a breast augmentation or a abdominoplasty. I'm really trying to get them to still take that week to 2 weeks and almost self-quarantine because I guess, you know, thinking about the whole COVID environment, it is going to reduce their immune system to some degree because they're trying to heal from a surgery. So yes. I always recommend that they're staying away from seeing a ton of family members or friends that want to come over and see how they're doing. I just kind of say, you know, for a week or two, just give yourself a little bit more time to recover. But it is wonderful that they can do all these things from home. They're back to work the next day, basically, because they're home. And are you finding the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally across the country, that's what we're seeing. And that's what people are reporting, that the demand when they opened back up was much higher than we expected. I mean, the consumer study that we did was during the pandemic. So that was just a projection, but it seems to be panning out when we've actually opened up. And, you know, part of it is, as you know, we're plastic surgery is not just about the procedures we do, but what it means to people. Right. It symbolizes more than it's that procedure than looking better. It for some people, it's a chance that they finally focusing on themselves or a reward they've given themselves for losing the weight or for getting, you know, hitting a milestone. For others, it's correcting something that, you know, was a symbolic of trauma from the past. So there's so much more to it than just having a procedure that you just do. And so I don't think for those people, wanting to do those procedures doesn't go away.
Right. Boy, I can definitely see why you became president of the society. That was so eloquent and so beautifully said. I'm happy everybody that may be listening just heard that. And we're going to have that recorded. If I didn't have it recorded, I'd be very, very upset. But that is really explaining so much about what plastic surgery means to people, what you just said. It's actually beautiful because I many times when I am doing a podcast or I'm, talking to patients, you definitely get the sense that what we're doing is so much more than a surgery or a procedure. You're really becoming involved in the patient's life and how they look at their life and their family and their career. And it is an amazing specialty. Yeah, I think what you said was absolutely beautiful.
That's why I love what we do.
Same with me. Let me tell you one little thing that I wanted to run by you, and I don't want you to agree with me if you don't believe that this is so, but I just want to kind of fly this by you since you are the president, you know. So here you go. Do you think... I'm kind of setting you up here, but I want to tell you, this is my feeling, but I'm asking you if you kind of agree. I definitely believe that moving forward into 2020, 2021, that the whole landscape of over-exaggerated plastic surgery or cosmetic surgery procedures are going to really start to calm down. I think patients that are wanting to come in to get their lips made more beautiful and shaped and enhanced will definitely want to do that. But I think the over-the-top crazy lips are going to fall out of favor. I think the big, you know, Brazilian butt lift or the fat transfers to the butt to just make things look not a normal situation, the larger breast augmentations. I think all of those things are going to start to fall by the wayside because I think people are going to sense that it's being insensitive to what just happened with the whole pandemic. And I'm very passionate about what I just said, but I don't want to convince you that that's what is going to happen. I'm just asking you, do you get that sense that people are going to have this like gut feeling that I don't want to do anything that's going to like be wrong and for other people to see me looking like this, because I just know that so many people died and there's still this pandemic going on. Do you feel like that could be? Or?
I mean, I definitely think that COVID, for many of us who've gone through it, it's sort of a chance to reflect on what you're doing and reflect and be grateful for the things that you do have for those of us who come out on the other side of it. Yeah. I mean, we also know that a number of plastic surgeons were redeployed either in the ICU or in the emergency room or other fields. And so I think that many of us, or I should say almost all of us, should come to the other side and just have a new worldview, for lack of a better word, right? And even even those of us who just had to shut down for a few months and not be able to operate, you know, it either confirmed in you that, geez, I love operating and I can't live without it, or it confirmed you, gosh, you know, maybe I don't need to be, you know. So for it's you know, you were forced into it, but it made you re-look at what you're doing with your life. And so in that vein, I think that people will look to say, well, what am I doing X, Y, and Z for my fillers, for this tummy tuck. Right. I hope that you're right in the sense that I hope that the, you know, you and I, we train so that you can do your work and nobody should know. It should be a natural result, right?
Absolutely.
And you and I know that's not what everybody asks for. But that's what we train many, many, many years to do. You know, I would much rather be enhancing the normal and making it better. And so that is my bias. And I think that even before COVID, though, that trend was heading in that direction as well. So I don't know if it'll be because of COVID, but I do sense that it seemed like the trend prior to COVID was going in that direction already.
I think so too. I think that just pushed it into that, you know, realm even faster. And I love the idea that, as the president of this Plastic Surgery Society, I really love the idea that you have the perspective of looking at so many areas, not only around the world, but the perspective of what a private practice is like, being the chief medical officer, and also running like an integrated breast group. And I think seeing that and having that wide kind of lens and wide perspective, I want to ask you, as we're closing up on all this, what are some thoughts that you have of what's going to happen moving forward? Like, you get a sense to really see things in such a big global environment. What can you tell everybody that's listening that hopefully would be positive, or just at least to latch onto to understand anything?
Well, I think the first thing is, the beauty of plastic surgery is that by nature we are multidisciplinary, right? Because if you work in breast cancer or cleft palate or anything else, or coming in and fixing complications of other procedures and so forth, by nature we have been trained to be multidisciplinary. And not only that, but we go from the ED to the ICU. So by nature, I think our worldview is broader, and that gives us some advantage, I think. And to answer your question, then, looking forward, I think there are going to be some major things that we're going to be at the crossroads of. COVID hurt a lot of practices out there. I know that our numbers show that, the surveys have shown that. We know that our studies show a good number of people had to furlough people and let people go, or decreasing their capital expenses, and especially people in private practice. The question is going to be, what is the viability of private practice out there? We're lucky in plastic surgery. We have more people in private practice than some specialties, but I think it'll be very important that we continue to be innovative, as our specialty is, and think about the ways to help our colleagues out there to stay viable. And they're going to be, we are looking at different ways, but there are going to be things out there that we're going to have to take opportunities and see how we can support. For example, ASPS has been looking at one point during the pandemic to see how we could support our members, whether that was trying to figure out lines of credit, or we currently have a way where you can sign up and then therefore buy supplies at lower rates. That's where the PPE portion came in. But beyond the society, but just how can we as practicing plastic surgeons come together to keep it viable? Because as long as it doesn't matter if you're not in private practice, the viability of private practice determines everybody else's leverage, whether you're employed or in academics. And then our academic centers are hurting and our employed physicians are hurting too, because as you heard, a number of areas are furloughing after they've all worked extra hard or on the front lines and they're being furloughed or having pay cuts. Their RVUs, of course, have all been hurt. And academics are looking at, you know, decreased funds for research, and GME was an issue. I mean, there's so many issues we're all dealing with. On the other hand, if you want to talk about a silver lining, is that we can now look at the fact that there are other opportunities we hadn't thought about. How can we use, for example, telehealth in a better way, right? What have we learned from all the webinars you were talking about? So from an ASPS standpoint, we've had so many webinars with huge, huge, huge attendance. I mean, some webinars had a couple thousand people on there.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
You know? Amazing. You couldn't even get a symposium to do that, right? I mean, except for our big annual meeting. So how can we leverage that? And maybe we haven't thought through how to best utilize all that technology that is out there. And in fact, our national meeting, which is coming up in October, it was supposed to be in San Francisco, but obviously given COVID, it's not going to be to happen in person. So we're going to make it a hybrid, but we don't want it just to be a string of webinars. We're going to try to think outside the box and make this really interactive, do things there and invite speakers we probably couldn't have gotten if it had been in person. So, you know, there's opportunity in there. You just have to think it through and think outside the box like we're used to doing.
Well, I have to tell you, it's been such an amazing honor to have you on the podcast. And
I
just
want to
go back. I have to tell you something. When you started your last bit of discussion and you went back and talked about how you go from the ED to the ICU and training, you really did bring me back to my training when I you really did a very good job doing this, by the way. You brought me back to really understanding why I wanted to go into being a plastic surgeon from the beginning.
Yes.
And it really is the ability to jump all around. You're running into the operating room to help a thoracic surgeon do something. You're going to the emergency room because there may have been a gunshot or someone broke their jaw, and you're going up to the intensive care unit to do something. And there aren't many specialties that really have the opportunity to just jump all over the place. And I do think that that does, and you're a perfect example of this, does lend itself to a very fulfilling life because you see the world and your life the same way. You're doing all these magnificent things. You're going through an illness on your own, and it's just allowing you to just see different opportunities, different perspectives. I really enjoyed speaking with you so, so much. You're just an amazing person. And I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast with me. This has been a true pleasure for me, honest.
I've had a great time, and I really appreciate you having me on. And, I'm sure that we'll be talking again in the future.
Absolutely. And I'm sure I'll see you at a meeting, and congratulations on everything you're doing, and continue to get better. And for everyone that's been listening, you have had a tremendous opportunity to listen to Dr. Lynn Jeffers. You've been listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis, and I'll speak with you again next week. So long, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Jeffers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. Keep listening, looking great, and feeling better.